This is the Freedom Fiends, and we are here for coming to you this morning from Podbay 2A, which is a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Lou Fien? Lou, yeah, I heard you there. Yes, and Braden.
Feel it.
Braden our other co-host.
Can you feel it,
Braden? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOD, no government license, and this allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOD.org. Now, this morning, it is morning. Well, it's morning here in the Midwest. I'm not sure if it is everywhere you guys are. But, Lou, I think you wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of the upcoming Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, and had a little bit of news about that. Are you selling tickets yet, or what's the story on the Midwest Fest?
The Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, the fifth annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, will be happening June 22nd through June 26th. That's Thursday through Friday. It's longer. Our fest isn't getting shorter. It's getting longer, unlike other festivals that are getting shorter and pairing the days off. Because not as good. But anyway, it's coming up. The registration is open. The early bird discount is in effect. I'm not sure how long it goes to, but since you're going to sign up right away, since you're going to register your friends and families right now, it doesn't matter how long it goes to. And there is an alternative currency discount. So if you are using Bitcoin, you will see additional savings. So register your friends and family right now. Round them up.
Round them up. Now, yeah, Lou,
and go to mplfest.org to do so.
So can you get your questions answered there? Things like, will I be sleeping on the ground, or can I have a cabin, or what the deal is, or what if I have a camper or something? Is all that stuff there, or somebody can help you out? Is that right?
Those questions should be answered on the website. If not, you can send an email. There should be a contact us link in there, and somebody will be happy to answer your questions. Or send me a message through FaceBeast.
But basically, this is not in some nice hotel anywhere. It's definitely out in the boondocks of Michigan, right?
It's a nice campground.
Yes,
there are cabins there.
But it's in the woods and on a lake and nice things like that, right?
Yeah.
Well, I can attest to that. I've been there several times now, and I plan on going back.
This will be your fourth.
It will be my fourth. But it's the fifth. It's the fifth annual, right?
Yes. You've been there for four or five.
And there are pictures at the... like on Saturday or something, when a day before it's over with, they always do a group picture, right?
Yep.
Of everyone who wants to get into the group picture. And every year it's bigger, but and I would hate to see the day when it became giant, but I know last year it was bigger than the year before and the year before that, but it was still well within the range of being fun enough and easy enough that you could actually meet and talk to every single person there.
Yep.
And I thought that was really enjoyable.
Friendly and intimate is the best way to describe it.
Yes.
And you can meet big name celebrities like Nick Hazelton.
Mm-hmm. He's the yak entrepreneur.
Well, according to our co-host Velashka, there's no such thing as yaks. So I guess last night's episode, I haven't heard it yet because I was asleep all day being sick. According to Nick's former babysitter, there's no such thing as yaks. They're Scottish Highland cattle or something like that.
Are you saying that Velashka is Nick's former babysitter?
The rumor is that she used to babysit him a couple years ago, and now he's getting feisty again. And she's trying to put him in his place.
Well, that could be hard.
Some pedantic yak antics.
Pretty much, yeah.
So he anyway. will be coming to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, and not the big one that's out on the East Coast.
That is
neither as big nor as long as it used to be, right?
That is correct. He is registered. He has rounded himself up and registered himself, and he's inquired about doing a presentation talking about yaks and free. Yaks and hogs or something like that, the road to freedom, I don't know. Mythological creatures and something, the road to freedom.
Perhaps there are many roads.
Yes.
You might have to test a number of them before you got to the yak road.
And there's a completely unsubstantiated false rumor that he's going to ride out there on yak back and do a documentary of his trip out there. And this is a completely false and unsubstantiated rumor, so I'm waiting for confirmation on it. And he's going to ride out there on yak back. We're going to butcher it up and sell it and use the proceeds to get him a Greyhound ticket back home.
Well, maybe before it was turned into barbecue, perhaps there could be yak rides and things.
Could be, yeah.
Could they do that? Would that not be a nice thing to do to a yak?
I'm pretty sure that given the choice, the yak would rather have people riding around on its back than being chopped up and cooked over an open flame.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. Just my thought.
I would feel the same.
Same.
Well, is there anything else on the mission, the Liberty Fest that you've just now thought of, Lou?
It's in June this year instead of August. It's going to be a really good time. We've been doing some of the planning and organizing meetings and trying to get things organized, and I think it's going to be really good. The presentations and discussion groups will be running all day on Friday, where last year they started on like Friday afternoon or evening. So I think Thursday will be a nice setup, get to know each other, go down to the lake, do some swimming, bathing, fishing, whatever, or hiking.
All right, and there will be a number of, I assume, a number of Freedom Fiends hosts that will be there, besides you and probably me and Nick. Anyone else you know will be coming?
I suspect Diana will probably be there, as usual.
That would be good. Mm-hmm. Diana's been there every year I've been there so far.
Yep, she's been there 4 out of 5.
Yeah, and then... Well, will James Weeks be there?
Most likely. He's been there for all of them.
Yeah. I thought that he had been there, every one that I had seen. So there could be, and there could be more. Who knows? Braden. Yeah,
who knows?
Maybe. You want to come?
Yeah, absolutely, Braden, dude. I remember last year Diana was, looking for Taggers On her road trip up there, and I thought a lot about it last year. She lives sort of near me, in the same state at least. So maybe this year I can hitch a ride with her and get on up there.
Yeah. Check it out.
Maybe we can get Veloshka to come out too, and she can arm wrestle with Nick over who's right on the... Or maybe she could just send him to bed without dessert or something like that.
Good.
He'll be hanging around the campfire at like 9 or 10 o'clock. He should be like, Nick, go to bed. You were bad.
Well, Nick's parents would probably feel more comfortable if there was someone there to a responsible person to keep an eye on him. Of course, they might prefer someone that was not a Fiends co-host, but still, you take what you can get.
Yeah, beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, but this is a really good event. If you're one of these theoretical libertarians that wonder how everything would work out in a anarcho-capitalist society, this is a pretty good example of it. So,
cool.
Come on out, give your theory a test drive, and it's both family and adult friendly.
Mm-hmm. So mark your calendar, and that's for June 22nd.
Thursday, June 22nd through Monday, June 26th. Monday will be the teardown day, and I will probably be cooking breakfast for everybody that's still there.
Very good. I can vouch for that too.
Cool.
It's a good deal. It's free. Luke, I think you'll take donations, but
Yeah. You know, yeah. People usually donate leftover bacon and stuff like that. And if somebody wants to throw a couple Satoshis in the Bitcoin jar, then that's fine. I will happily accept.
I'm sure you enjoy hearing them clink when they land.
I've never heard of such a thing as leftover bacon, though. I'm not even sure what you're talking about there, Lou.
Well, when people bring lots of bacon with them to an event...
You're saying there's extra bacon? It's just hard to believe.
Well, more specifically, they bring enough to cover their meals, and then they bring enough to contribute to the final meal, the group meal.
Oh, man. That sounds great.
Yeah.
That could happen as long as the bacon wasn't cooked. You know, if you got to the end and says there's some pieces of crispy bacon left here, then there won't be any left. But if it's raw, there might be some. Huh?
Either way, it works out.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, Lou, thank you for that. And every time you're on, you should mention that.
You're very welcome.
Because it's a great time. It's a great time. Yeah, and Lou's food service is one of the features to come for, because he's a great, great cook, and all these meals are prepared outdoors. Most of it in the his mobile assault kitchen, but I think sometimes you move over to the big campfire too. So
yes, for the final meal, I do that because I have a 16 quart Dutch oven. And it's too big to put on my stove.
So either way, it'll be a little smoky.
Cool.
Anyway, well, on with the show.
Yes. On with the show. And well, as before, we were coming onto the air. Braden, Michael, he's. I don't think he's going to be on the show tonight. But then, as soon as I say that, who knows? He may. He may do a. Is it a furry, Lou?
Yeah.
but at any rate, he sometimes sends us some good suggestions for topics, and we've got one that was an interesting one. So we'll be talking about that. I think Braden has some things to say about it when we come back in the next segment of the Freedom Fiends. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
I do like Michigan in the summer.
That's 23.5 degrees centigrade grade height.
Oh, that one. Yes.
It's a good scale.
Well, actually, I mean, Kelvin and Celsius are really the same, aren't they? They just start at different places or something?
No, Kelvin.
Good question.
If you're at either 0 or 100 on Kelvin, you're dead.
Ah, yes.
And you're probably not doing much better in between either.
All right, 10 seconds, I think.
I believe.
No, we're on, aren't we?
Oh, we are.
Music? Oh, goodness.
Oh,
did you hear the music?
Oh, my. I did not.
There we are. There we are.
Hey, we're on the radio.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Braden, we were talking before the break that Michael sent an article that was pretty interesting, and you had some thoughts on it, and maybe you could tell us a little bit what it's about. But there's the name of the article, which is at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, is "Patents Are a Big Part of Why We Can't Own Nice Things. The Supreme Court Should Fix That." So, basically, what's that about, and maybe your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. The it's an interesting article. You know, the Supreme Court usually takes some more of the more complicated and interesting cases. So, I would say this definitely falls along those lines. I'd like to give the caveat, though. The EFF has recently become like super statist, so. You know, we'll just have to put that part of the organization aside and, you know, read this article. But it's to do with a discussion on patents, there is a company called Lexmark International, and they make printers, and they make little ink cartridges for their printers, and they put a little bit of text on the side of their ink cartridges saying that you could not do certain things with them after you buy them. And another company has decided, no, just because you write it down doesn't mean we have to do what you say. Your patent rights have expired when someone buys your product. So yeah, this is the sort of the very basics of that argument, as far as I can tell. And it's made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. I guess it was a lower court, one of the federal circuit courts had decided to side with Lexmark and say that they could protect their products after they're being sold. So that's been repealed, obviously, or appealed, I should say, and gone up to the Supreme Court.
Now, isn't it that this other company, since Lexmark makes printer cartridges with toner or whatever in it, mm-hmm. ink or toner, I don't know which it is, or maybe it's both, but this other company was refilling their cartridges
yep.
for the printers, and Lexmark said, you can't do that because we say you can't. I yep. take it, and that's the whole thing. The thing that I was having some trouble getting a handle on was that mm-hmm. Lexmark, they probably don't sell these things directly to this little company, right?
Right.
Usually they're refilling. I mean, Lexmark would mm-hmm. know whether they were selling empty or filled cartridges. I assume that empty cartridges to this company.
Yes, absolutely. Here's the big wrinkle in the case, because you're right on that. So, you know, let's say a printer company sells an ink cartridge to someone like me, a consumer. I use that ink up, and then I go to a third party, and I say, hey, can you put some more ink in here? And that is where Lexmark is trying to say that third party cannot refill my ink cartridge because they put a sticker on the side of it that says you're not allowed to do that.
Okay, so that's probably why, you know, this could be done by agreement. If I sold you something, I could say, I'll sell you this, but only on the condition that you don't refill the cartridges. Or you can turn them to me for refilling or whatever it is. And sure. you say, okay, here's my money. And then I would, under contract, I would, under contract law, be able to hold you to whatever you agreed to. But how do you hold the next party in the line responsible for that agreement that you had with the original Lexmark?
Yeah.
So you
let's get into
have
that when we come back.
Yeah. Well, we are going out to the market one more time. So,
where you can buy things like ink cartridges.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Purse.io is a great website where you can spend Bitcoin on Amazon or trade Amazon gift cards for Bitcoin. I use Purse myself and I love it. You can also get discounts on Amazon. You can get 5% right this minute, or if you place your order and wait a day or so, you can name your discount and get 10%, 20%, even up to 33% off. You can try Purse right now and get 0.01 Bitcoin free after you complete your first order over $50. And if you go through the Freedom Fiends link, Purse will also send 0.01 Bitcoin to the Freedom Fiends. Help yourself to some agorism and help Liberty Media while you're at it. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Purse link at the top right, even if you've used Purse before. Or enter the referral code FIENDS when you sign up at purse.io. That's FIENDS. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. Do it!
Oh, yeah. Freedom Fiends. Hey everybody, this is Braden here again. I'm talking with Randy about this Supreme Court patent case, this article from the EFF.org. And I wanted to read a little bit from it. It says here, the case will turn on how the Supreme Court applies patent law's, quote, exhaustion doctrine. And it goes on to explain that that exhaustion doctrine provides that the initial authorized sale of a patented item terminates all patent rights. So basically, my non-lawyer understanding of this would be that as soon as you sell a product to someone, your patent rights are terminated. So that's been the precedent that has been set in the past by the Supreme Court, actually. And now that's what's being challenged because a certain company that makes printer cartridges wants to prevent other people from refilling them. And I don't know, me personally, this just really grates me the wrong way. I've had a lot of issues in the past with copyright laws and intellectual property, just sort of that whole idea. So I don't know, this probably like gets to me on some emotional level that isn't really rational. But yeah, anyway, this one really grinds my gears. I'm there. That's the word I'm looking for, triggered. So anyway, this isn't the first time this sort of thing has happened in the court system. In the past, there's been like coffee cup makers who decided that you could only use their particular coffee cups in their particular machines. So they used copyright law and patent law and all sorts of just, I don't know, they seem like dirty, kind of underhanded tricks. It definitely doesn't seem like the way the law was intended to benefit society you from making coffee.
One of the problems that it seems like you run into with this sort of thing is that the people that are complaining about the way you're using their product after they sell it, and maybe it gets sold on to somebody, they're complaining about the next seller down the road, what they're complaining about. So far, the things you're talking about are like refill issues, like the coffee cup issue or the,
sure,
the toner issue and that. And I'm not sure if the courts could even find a basis in that. You know, like, oh, I had an opportunity to sell something, but somebody beat me to it and sold, you know, sold their toner instead of mine. I don't know if the courts would be, you know, would use that as a basis, just to, this raw, you know, kind of greed. Oh, who gets the money here? I'm not sure if that would be the basis or not, and I don't know enough about patent law to know if it could be.
Let me chime in on this a little bit.
Yeah,
Lou. And ultimately what this comes down to is you have a company that produces a product that has a part to it that needs to be changed out every now and again. So what they're expecting is to have a residual income by people purchasing new toner cartridges from them, meaning not going to somebody else. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to use the law to direct business back to them and prevent other people from doing this business. Now, if you actually bought this printer, then what you do with the cartridge after it's been exhausted is none of their darn business unless you're renting it from them, in which case then probably the rental price needs to be a little bit lower and there needs to be a rental agreement in there. But the bottom line is that they're trying to use the law, they're trying to use IP, patent, trademark, copyright, all that other nonsense to their own benefit to stifle other people from competing against them in the market. So in other words, they're trying to say competition is illegal. And as Ludwig von Mises once said, politicians always complain about the price of new products, but continue to issue exclusive patents for those same products.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
This is a garment-created problem.
Yeah, and this whole category where it comes up, another one would be like, you know, your little pitcher that has the Brita filters in it. And, you know, if Brita wanted to sue the guy who makes you know, the knockoff filters in it, and it's, it'd be exactly the same thing. But sure, if the, depending on how the court would rule, they could come back and say that the original patent holder could make any conditions they want. This is coming up in a refill situation, but
right,
it could be anything. It could be, you know, the guy, yeah, that makes the company that makes, has the patent on a kind of a Band-Aid might tell you that, no, you can't put that on your knee. It's only on your arm, or, yeah, or, well, you know, Randy, they could dictate anything that they wanted if the patent law was construed narrowly, sure, enough.
Yeah, this has come up in the past, actually, in an unrelated to refill sort of scenario. There's a tractor company that, you know, modern machinery is run by computers, and these computers run software. So this tractor company has a copyright on the software that helps run these tractors. And then people started developing third-party software for it that could do whatever the operator might want and that the manufacturer didn't necessarily plan on. So that came up in court as well. Like you're saying, this is a much sort of broader issue of, like, just sort of companies using the force of the law to tell you what you can and cannot do with things you've purchased, whether, you know, it be a tractor or a coffee maker.
That's a good example, too, because there's an instance of it's not a company coming in just to provide a knockoff product that would, yep, be available from the original manufacturer. Although that's a great benefit, because the knockoff is usually half price or less from what the, mm-hmm, original company is. And if the thing works just as well, then why would you want, you know, the company? But in, you're talking about someone, you know, sort of standing on the shoulders of the original software maker, and without violating their copyright, in other words, stealing, you know, whatever their code was, they could make some other software that would run on that tractor, say, if that's what, yep, you're talking about. That, yep, would be, yep, lots better than the other one, and who knows whether it'd be, yep, cheaper or not. Maybe they could get more for it, but it would really be a huge hindrance to all of society if somebody couldn't make better software to make that tractor run better or farm better or whatever you were going, right, to, right, do with it. And and so as a matter of even, you know, when the state looks at its public policy, you know, unless somebody's laying down, you know, lots of lobbying money or bribe somewhere, you'd think that would be an issue to even the state. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you know, absolutely, they are very interested in maintaining those monopolies.
They are. You know, I think what comes down to for me, what feels so wrong is that, you know, when you purchase something, it's yours now. And these companies that we're talking about, they're kind of sort of reaching beyond the grave or something and into my life and trying to control me. It's more like I'm renting whatever product they've sold me instead of me just owning it outright. And in fact, I think that's some of the legal basis for at least the tractor company's arguments, is that you don't actually purchase anything from them. You're just renting. So, yeah, it really, gosh, it just comes down to the inability to own anything if a company makes it that way.
You know, you were mentioning the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and I think at the end of their article they were talking kind of a little bit about, you know, the problems that they saw with this case if it didn't go the right way. And it said the Federal Circuit, it's the Federal Circuit, that's, there's a bunch of federal circuits that have their own court of appeals, you know, all around the country, and one of them is called the Federal Circuit. It's in Washington, D.C. and I think that they handle these kinds of cases. And right, here's my ignorance is coming out. I'm a criminal lawyer.
Yeah, I think they typically take copyright, yeah, IP type, yeah, cases.
And yeah, they have ruled in favor of Lexmark in this case, and said, yeah, nobody else can fill your cartridges. And and that was based on an earlier case where they ruled the same way against somebody else. I'm not sure who it was. But Electronic Frontier Foundation, they're saying that this seriously undermines the exhaustion doctrine, which, as you pointed out earlier, just means when you sell something to somebody, you just shut up about it. You have no more business telling somebody what to do with it.
I personally think a stateless society without all this government nonsense, that's how things would be.
Oh, I think you're right.
I don't think this could even exist.
No, actually, right. Things could be a little bit worse, maybe, in a stateless society, because there are some governmental rules about how much you can tie up in a contract, say, between, a buyer and a seller, whereas in a stateless society, a buyer and a seller should be able to reach any agreement that they want. Whereas the government actually has rules that limit the amount of interference a seller can exert over a buyer. Now, in a stateless society, though, who knows how much, a stateless society really would mean how much the public is going to tolerate,
I think the rape buster would come about and deal with that stuff. The rape buster, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, in the theory of collusion and cartelization, where all the manufacturers get together and say, okay, we're going to limit production, we're all going to charge the same price. By limiting production, we're gonna jack the prices up. It's kind of like the predatory pricing fallacy. But anyway, they always say, all right, yeah, we're gonna do this, and we're gonna just choke the living daylights out of the consumer. They're gonna have to just suck it up. And there's always one or 14 of the 15 that get involved in this, or sometimes 15, that will secretly keep the production going so that when supplies run out, they're able to fill the gap. So the rate buster is the person who doesn't go along with the collusion. And in a situation where if you have, let's say, company Lexmark that says, well, you can't do this with our cartridges afterwards, another company will come out, call it Braden Mark, and he'll say, go ahead, do what you want with it. But you know what? We're going to price our refill services reasonably low so that you will come to us.
The beauty of a voluntary society.
Right. But it's like everybody was freaking out about that Martin Shkreli or whatever his name is, and then somebody came out doing almost the same medication, selling it like a buck a piece, and then he was whining and crying like a little B word.
Oh, was that the epinephrine shot thing?
It was like an AIDS drug.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
All right, we're back. This is the Freedom Fiends, wrapping up our first hour of the show. We've been talking about patents and the Supreme Court and how to refill your ink cartridges at home for less money, this sort of thing. Lots of good info here on the Fiends. I just had one last thought on that whole topic, and it's basically, no matter what the Supreme Court or anyone else writes down on paper, people generally do what's in their own best interest. So, I mean, granted, it would be a huge nuisance if the Supreme Court decided that companies could kind of extend their patent rights further than they already do. But at the end of the day, I'm not too worried about it because I feel like people are just going to carry on as they always do anyway. So, I don't know. I feel like that's a little spot of light in a maybe otherwise dark story. So,
if I can add to that, a little minor correction. People do what they perceive to be in their own best interest.
Fair enough.
It's not necessarily doing what is in their best interest, but what they perceive. Now, the thing about patent law, this IP, and for any of you that are friends of the Dangerous History Podcast, our friend Prof. CJ over there.
Oh, yeah.
And he's done the history of slavery and everything else. The one thing that you find about things like IP and fugitive slave laws and just the institution of slavery in general, and also with cannabis, too, you cannot have these prohibitions. You cannot have these institutions and maintain them privately. You need a large state. You need a tax base to socialize the cost of. You know, it's like people talk about how evil Standard Oil and United Fruit were for going to the U.S. government and getting the Marine Corps to go into Central America and South America and all these different places to overthrow governments and just generally screw things up. And they're blaming the corporations for this. But and don't get me wrong, that Standard Oil and United Fruit, they were bad for doing that. But ultimately, the reason that they went to the government was because either they could not afford to or they did not want to afford the cost of overthrowing these governments. Because you just can't, a private corporation can't afford to do these things on their own. You need the socialization of the cost, and you need tax cattle to pick up the tab for it.
As a business matter, nobody can afford that. The only way you can afford to do that kind of stuff is if you steal the money that you're going to do it with.
So that leads to another question. Well, if there was no government left, then warlords would take over. Okay, how are warlords going to finance their warlordism? And what are they going to get in the end?
I always find that to be a lame argument, the idea that, well, we can't possibly have a stateless society because there would still have to be security companies. And, oh, my gosh, what if a security company became like a government? I'm thinking, what, you're positing a worst-case scenario is that I'd be back where I am now?
The worst-case scenario that a statist can come up with is that new governments would sprout up and they would look just like the ones that exist now or have existed in human history. That is the absolute worst possible outcome that they can come up with. They can't think of dragons coming out of the earth and just blowing fire all over people and turning them into really well-done marshmallows. No, the worst they can come up with is it would look just like it does now.
Terrifying.
Yes, a predator drone would be turning you into a well-done marshmallow.
Eek.
Goodness.
Yeah, well, the thing with the not only the state, but I think that you reach a point though that it doesn't matter how big the state is, you cannot stop. It's like the drug war, and you know, filling ink cartridges. Give me a break. I mean, they can go after this company. I don't know how big Impression Products is, that Lexmark, which is a big company. I don't know how big this Impression Products is, but I'm guessing they're not as big as Lexmark, but most people that would do this sort of thing, they don't have a target anywhere, and I don't know how they could possibly enforce it. You get around it other ways. You know, maybe the Impression Products will sell a kit to refill them yourself. I don't know.
Yeah, they'll start making 3D printers that can make the cartridges for you.
Yeah. You can overreach in the government, but when you do, that you're not going to get it done. Good guys win.
Worms.
And we'll be back at the top of the hour, 6 minutes after.
Worms.
Let's go to the market. See you gentlemen then.
You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this. And we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today, because you inspire joy, joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2018 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple wire into your cortex now. Are you there, Randy? Are you feeling the purple wire in the cortex?
Sure, but I thought it was red and blue.
Well, if you mix red and blue, you end up with a purple wire. So.
I know, and now I'm confused.
How about you, Lou? Are you feeling the fiends?
I'm feeling it all right.
All right.
Bad touch.
There you go. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
And Donald Trump is a liar, a socialist, and his toupee stinks.
Worms. Speaking of maybe haircuts and toupees, I'm looking at an article here entitled "Haircuts for the Homeless: The Latest Public Menace." Randy, what are you on about here?
Yeah, this is an article at FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education, that I ran across a while back about this. It was a student, a cosmetology student, who's being investigated for giving free haircuts to the homeless. And this poor guy, first of all, he's a cosmetology student, and then his school got shut down unexpectedly. Well, he's far enough along, he learned to do some things, and one was giving haircuts. And he decided that while he was figuring out what he was going to do, I guess career-wise, that he would continue his practice of going once a week. I think it was every Sunday he would visit these homeless people and would give them haircuts. And you're looking at that and trying to think, what's bad about this? This is like a nice guy handing out sandwiches to starving people and that. And let me see, I'm going to read just a bit of it here. This was especially significant to these individuals, since even a simple shampooing was enough to help restore some of the dignity they'd lost while living on the street. After being chastised by passersby on a daily basis, many began to feel disconnected from society. Having this human interaction was as good for morale as it was for their hair. And this fellow, his name is Monta Dioka, I'm not sure, I apologize, because this guy's... he's a hero, as far as I'm concerned, doing this for these poor guys. Instead of applauding the efforts of Montes Dioka, who had been experiencing rough times since the closure of his school, the state went out of its way to penalize him. And of course, this is because you have to have a barber's license or a cosmetology license to do to give a haircut. And this is one of those industries which somehow the barbers or the hairdressers have somehow gotten in and convinced legislatures, and this is the way it is everywhere in the country, or darn near anyway, that you have to have government permission, you have to have a license to do that. I ran across an article. I was doing some research on occupational licensing, which is sort of near and dear to my heart since I'm not allowed to practice my profession without a license. And I found this is a scam that has gone back for way more than 100 years, at least 125, 150 years almost. But in 1952, there was a document put out by something called the Council on State Governments. And it told a little story in it that went like this. Not long ago, the governor of a Midwestern state was approached by representatives of a particular trade anxious to enlist the governor's support in securing passage of legislation to license their trade. "Governor," the men said, "passage of this licensing act will ensure that only qualified people will practice this occupation. It will eliminate charlatans, incompetence, or frauds, and it will thereby protect the safety and welfare of the people of this state." The governor, from long experience, was somewhat skeptical. "Gentlemen," he asked, "are you concerned with advancing the health, safety, and welfare of the people under the police powers of the state, or are you primarily interested in creating a monopoly situation to eliminate competition and raise prices?" The spokesman for the occupational group smiled and said, "Governor, we're interested in a little of both." That's probably partly true. I think they're more interested in the killing competition and protecting their profession from having too many people in it. And the standards argument is probably just the excuse to bring that in. Sure. But and a lot of people, you know, they look at that and say, "Well, gee, I mean, I want my brain surgeon to be, you know, properly trained and certified and competent to work on my head." But that, of course, you know, is not the issue. The issue is whether the state is competent to do that and whether the state ought to do it, you know, by the use of force, which is the only way they do anything at all. And aside from, you know, those areas where you say, well, you'd need to have some sort of way to know that this person was good, you get to most of the these licensing situations where the government requires a license, and you can't even think of a reason why the license should be required. You know, even with barbers to cut hair, what is it they're trying to protect the public against? You know, a bad haircut? is there a problem with, like, somebody getting the corner of their ear snipped off accidentally? You know, this is not the sort of thing that you can imagine anything really horrifying. Even cosmetologists, hairdressers, I mean, what if they leave some of the chemicals on too long? You get your, you know, your skin burned a little bit. If that's the worst thing that's going to happen to you, you wonder why, you know, you want the government to get involved. And the only possible answer is that the government wants to get involved because somebody with a good lobbyist is, you know, wants you to make it a crime that you can't cut hair or dye hair or something like that unless you've got permission from the existing barbers and hairdressers. And that's who runs it. The government always turns it back over to the hairdressers. It turns it back over to the lawyers. Right. It turns it back over to the doctors. The only thing the doctors, the lawyers, the hairdressers, and everybody else want is, look, we'll take care of this. We'll tell these jerks what to do. But if they do it when we don't allow them to, we need you to call it a crime, and you need to send them to jail. Because the one thing we can't do, you know, this is kind of like, you know, why the Pharisees brought Jesus to Pilate. You know, we'd take care of this, but we don't have the political power to execute someone, so we're bringing him to you. And it's the same thing with occupational licensing. You got to have the state there to lower the criminal boom on anybody who doesn't do what the existing lawyers, doctors, architects, whatever it is. Have you run into this? Do you have a job that requires a license, or would you like one?
I do have tons of experience with this, being an architecturally trained person. So you'll notice there, I'm careful not to say that I'm an architect, because that would be illegal of me to use that particular word in this particular case. So yeah, I do house design or building design or things of that nature, but I do not do, quote, architecture. So
Well, that's kind of interesting because you can do it. I assume that in most places a general contractor could say, "Yeah, I'll build you a house," and then could build somebody a house, and they would be a well, they might have to have a general contractor's license though, but
they would.
Probably wouldn't be the many years it would be required of an architect.
Sure. Well, in general, you can design a small house without needing to be called an architect, but anything larger than that, you need to get one of these quote-unquote professional licenses.
There is another article I ran into has this touching headline. State licensing rules could send a woman to jail for just touching a horse.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is... she has been studying horse massage since 2010, and she's been learned how to massage horses. I don't know how big a market there is for that, but this is kind of like the thing that, you know, the old canard. I don't know if it's still illegal anywhere yet, but for a long time, the hairdressers were fighting people who would braid hair. And saying, no, nobody's allowed to braid hair but us. And yet, we're talking about the African hair braiding, which no cosmetology school taught. So you couldn't go and get a hairdresser's license, cosmetology license, and learn how to braid the hair. And this woman, you know, I think pointed out that you can't go to veterinary school and that, too, is going after her as the Tennessee Board of Veterinary Medical Examiners. You can't go to veterinary school and learn how to do horse massage. It's kind of like you can't get, chiropractic from a standard medical school. Mm-hmm. And so isn't it sort of laughable that you would have to be a doctor, you know, I mean not a doctor, but a veterinarian, to do horse massage, which you're utterly untrained for doing and have no experience, yet this woman, who has been trained to do it and has lots of experience, is not allowed to do it. It's kind of like all you need is the thing that's most important here is that you have the license, not that you know anything about it. I mean, it's just as nutty in my profession. I'm a lawyer, and yet I am totally legally qualified to go out and draft you a big, complicated, honking trust document, you know, for your estate. And believe me, if I did that, nothing of yours would go anywhere that you wanted it to go. Because I don't know squat about that. It's been, you know, almost 30 years since I took the bar exam. I knew enough to pass the exam and probably forgot everything I knew. I'm utterly incompetent to handle such issues. And the only thing that...
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Do you want to be able to tell almost anyone almost anything with only two words? And how about if you could do it without saying a single word? Then you need Not a Guarantee, Wolbert's, the new app that's like Pocket Alibi Lite, in that it's like Pocket Alibi if Pocket Alibi only had two words instead of 200 words. Oh yeah, and if it also played the Wolbert's podcast. Wolbert's, that's our word. Not a Guarantee, Wolbert's, is from Beastlick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, the good people who brought you Bipcoin, Fiendphone, and the best-selling app, Find Gigi Allen's Grave. Log on today at https://play.google.com and get the free Bipcot licensed app, Not a Guarantee, Wolbert's. Do it! Do it! Do it till you're satisfied!
Well, the Freedom Fiends are back. We're back from the market, and we were talking about obviously absurd occupational licensing laws that would require you to have government permission before you could do something like cut someone's hair, or braid their hair or massage a horse. Or there are states that require you to have a government license to be an interior decorating.
Mm-hmm.
Interior decorator. What is that? They're protecting the public against the carpet matching the drapes. Everybody at once. But my point is that those are laughable concerns, and the legislators that pass those laws should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. And I think some of them are so ashamed of themselves, they're actually going back and repealing some of these licensing laws. That's kind of a good direction to go in. Repealing laws is probably the only legitimate thing that the legislature does. But on the other hand, though, aren't there some things that are real concerns? I mean, very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
So that if you want to be an architect, don't you have the potential of bringing down a whole auditorium down on 10,000 people's heads?
Definitely.
Or a bridge over a river that has 100 cars on it, you know, when it goes down, or the doctor who is doing surgery, you know, to take out your gallbladder. And obviously you need some way to, you know, for the public to be protected, for each of us to be protected. If you're the one who needs your gallbladder out, how do you know that the person that's doing that is competent to do it? And I'll step back a moment from the fact that the idea that the government license proves that, because it doesn't. But
ask you this question. It's going to go back to something that we talked about a few segments ago. Is this a problem that government has solved? These examples that you just gave, under occupational licensing, is the wrong organ being taken out? Are buildings collapsing? Okay, so obviously, government licensure is not a solution to this problem. And to be completely honest to you, there's always going to be a mistake that's made in medicine. As long as humans are doing it, there's going to be human error. Plain and simple. It is what it is.
Would it be worse if you didn't have the government forcing licensing?
I don't see why it would. I mean, it's not like a government license actually creates capability to do the job. No.
Sure.
What if the license came with your medical degree? So let's say you go to Harvard University Medical School, which is reputed to be a good medical school. They do have a medical school there, right?
Sure. I think so,
okay.
Yes.
All right, well, let's just say that they do. All right, Harvard is usually reputed to be a very good school. So when they give a medical degree and they say, okay, Dr. Braden is ready to go out there and be a brain surgeon, then that should stand on its own. But somebody who went to, I don't know, University of Backwoods,
Texas.
BFE, maybe they're not quite so good. You know?
Well, now there's also other things that could be done, though. Rather than the school that you got your degree from, there could also be some testing, certification.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what if there was a group that was similar to, like, Underwriters Laboratories for electronics that did these things with medical testing?
Is there any reason why that wouldn't work?
No, there isn't. But the thing is, if you have a group doing the testing, isn't that kind of redundant since Harvard did the testing already?
Well, it could be, but you wouldn't have to decide in a stateless society. You wouldn't have to decide ahead of time what certifications were needed and which ones weren't, because the consumer would decide. And if the consumer says, well, where's that tag from Underwriters to this lamp I'm going to buy? I don't know if I trust this, but I know I trust Underwriters Laboratories, which is a private outfit. And so the consumers, I mean, people don't have that tag on their electronics because the public doesn't care. They have it there because they think it's important enough to to that the public wants to see it. Maybe their insurers want to see it. But somebody is pressuring these people to have that label on there and get certified through Underwriters Laboratories. Can that be extended to all of these professions that have very serious results?
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media is not easy, but it is effective. Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media doesn't even pay very much at all. Sometimes we even have to pay out of our own pockets. But we do it because we have to. For you. And for the children. Here at the Freedom Fiends, we've been producing amazing and effective Liberty Media every day since 2011. Radio shows, podcasts, movies, music, cryptocurrencies, and yes, even memes. The Freedom Fiends also run the world's only Liberty Media Teaching Hospital and the world's only voluntarist media university. Our hands-on classes educate and shape hundreds of the great Liberty speakers of today and tomorrow, and they, in turn, will teach and inspire others. Heck, even the ones who got fired or quit in a huff still hold useful skills and equipment to hone their own Liberty Media and teach others. Freedom Fiends Media and our students' media is a rising groundswell to help create happy Liberty lives around the world and maybe even on to Alpha Centauri. Kitty cats and puppies like living in Liberty homes more than in statist homes. So please donate to the Freedom Fiends, if only for the kitties. Hashtag please donate Freedom Fiends, think of the kitties.
Hey everybody, we are back, Freedom Fiends here. This is Braden and I'm speaking with Randy and Lou. We've been talking about occupational licenses and some of the stated goals behind those. Namely, it's often cited the reasons for these licenses would be health concerns or safety concerns, things like that. And we touched on it a little bit in the last segment about how our current system of coerced licensing doesn't really accomplish that goals, and I wonder if maybe there's a better way to get those benefits without having to use any coercion.
Right, and we were talking about, you know, as a couple alternatives, and you could use different words for it, but the difference between a government license, which you cannot get without permission, and if you try to practice your profession without that, it's a criminal charge against you. Normally called practicing X without a license, and that's a crime, I think, everywhere. Mm-hmm. Or that scheme versus some sort of certification where a private organization or maybe trade or professional organizations have some system where they can certify or attest that a person meets, you know, certain standards of performance and competence, and that you can look at this and know that the person is qualified to take care of you. And that's an assurance that the government doesn't really help that much in. One of the problems with government licensing is that they have a lot of rules that are not really necessary. I mean, there are the ones that get me are the good character rules. So if you have ever been convicted of any felony, and we're talking about felony driving while revoked, felony bad check, it doesn't matter. You are out. You cannot practice a whole huge number of almost any profession that requires a license and in this country. It's ridiculous. And if you it doesn't matter whether you would do a great job at that thing. You're just not allowed to do it, and you're out the door on that. So and often misdemeanors. If it's a misdemeanor, I believe most states call it something like, if it's a misdemeanor of moral turpitude, which I think, you know, it's like shoplifting when you were 17 years old is a crime of moral turpitude. So the rules are very inflexible, kind of useless. They have, you know, crazy rules that dictate how you got your knowledge. There's real good arguments that a person could become a perfectly good lawyer or architect or barber or whatever it would be by serving an internship and act as an apprentice, I guess you would say.
Like Lysander Spooner did.
Yeah, working in a law office for, you know, a few years, and then you would have some kind of testing that a certification organization might do, or even the government could improve their process just by getting rid of unnecessary rules. I think California does not require law school. Most places require you go to a state certified law school before you can even sit for the bar to determine whether you're competent. Now, how useless is that? If you could pass the bar exam, why did you need the 3 years of law school? So I don't get any of that. You could make these things realistic, and actually, if you'd had those 3 years in an apprenticeship, you'd come out a heck of a lot more qualified to take care of clients than you learn in law school. You don't get that much there. You come out from there, and someone handed you a petition to go file at the circuit court, you'd have to have them point you the way. You would know nothing about that sort of thing. So all kinds of crazy things that are in there that don't even belong. And, you know, it's hard to imagine why that should be an ironclad rule. Gentlemen,
So, I mean, basically, just to sum that up, our current system now it's inconsistent, and it really does not deliver on the results that it's trying to promise. So, yeah, that's why we're here on the radio trying to discuss maybe an alternate way to get those goals accomplished.
Yeah, and you know, some of the crazy things too is that you're expected so often that you get a lawyer and you've got a traffic ticket. Well, come on, do you really need the guy that graduated at the top of his class at Harvard Law School? And yet, the law schools and the state bar organizations, all of them say, no, every lawyer we turn out and license is a Cadillac lawyer. And you're saying, well, I can really only afford a Chevy, but it doesn't matter. You're going to get the Cadillac lawyer for your traffic ticket, even though the lawyer's lowest secretary in the office could handle that ticket for you and probably handle it better than the lawyer, because actually that's who's doing the work anyway. Same way with your divorce. You come in the door of the lawyer's office, they send you into the lawyer, he talks to you about what's going to happen here, he takes your money, and, you know, we'll take care of it, pats you on the head, sends you out the door, and he walks out and hands the paperwork to the paralegal, who's the person who actually does all the work. And everything is done by the paralegal, and they put the whole thing together. And when it's time to get the judge to sign off for the divorce, the lawyer picks it up and walks into court with the file, because only the lawyer is allowed to walk into a courtroom, says, "Judge, please give me what I've asked for." And the judge says, "Okay," and signs it, and you walk out. And the only thing the lawyer did was take your money and walk into court on that day. And of course, anybody could have walked into court on that one day. It might be.
Anybody could have took your money too.
It might have been the junior lawyer who just walked through the door that day, since it wasn't a contested case. When in fact, if they allowed anyone to handle a divorce petition, you want people that know what they're doing. But guess what? That paralegal would know how to handle this uncontested matter and could do it just dirt cheap, and would be happy to do it, except they go to jail for it, so they don't. And there's so many things that people could do if they had people that just had enough skills to do what they want to do, but you're not allowed to have that. there's other things. They've done studies in different places where when you have more stringent licensing laws in that, what you end up with is a whole lot less of people that are in that business, you know, to keep the prices up high. And high prices are bad enough. You can afford to pay them. But when the prices get high, if the dentist costs too much to go to the dentist, then you're not going to go to the dentist. And they found that states that have more stringent rules for qualifying as an electrician have the highest rates of electrocutions. Because of the do-it-yourselfers who can't afford the extreme rates that the very few electricians charge to do their work. And you have the same thing. They did studies on the quality of the dentistry in states that have real stringent state government permission licensing, that it makes it very hard to be a dentist, as opposed to states that are far more lax in that. And they did these studies with recruits going into the Army. So they were getting people from all the different states, and they correlated their dental health with the onerousness of licensing of dentists in those states, and found that the states that had low standards for dentists had the best teeth.
Wow.
Something's wrong there. Something's really wrong with a result like that.
It's true for architecture, too. They price themselves out of doing things like house design. It just costs far too much, so they end up sort of not getting those type of jobs at all. They have to go do other types of work. Similar to the dentist situation.
Yeah,
There's nothing wrong with that outcome. It's the natural outcome. And the problem was with the magical thinking that you can scribble all these words down on paper and get the outcome that you expect. The outcome that you want.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when I was a kid, my mother, I don't know, once a month, well, actually not just my mother, all the mothers in my whole neighborhood would haul all of the kids that I hung out with, all the boys anyway, hauled us over to a private home with this middle-aged lady in our town. I think she's passed on now, but her name was Mrs. McAfoos. And Mrs. McAfoos cut hair. And she did it. She cut heads for, I don't know, 50 cents a head. And she buzzed through them. It took her, she cut 10 heads an hour. And, you know, different mothers in other neighborhoods brought their kids over. We might have, 15 or 20 kids from our street that would go over there. And they'd take up half of her morning and that. But you cut 10 heads an hour and you did that all day long at 50 cents a head. You were making really good money for back in the 60s. I mean, that was at a time when, my dad wasn't making $5 an hour. That's probably about what he was making, and she's making a lot more than that, cutting, you know, giving black market haircuts. And she never did. I mean, I remember, you know, my mom warning us and said, don't ever tell anyone that Mrs. McAfoos cuts your hair, because she'll get into trouble. And that always seemed unfair, but it also seemed sort of delicious. I felt an accomplice.
you were getting away with something.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of dirty, and I knew, you know, that my mom was getting a good price on the haircuts and wasn't having to pay the barber the buck and a half that he would have charged for the same haircut or whatever it would have been. But that was kind of my childhood experience with the black market, and I never could see that there was any harm with it.
Doesn't seem like there would be any.
Yeah, and this is something that's just come along in the last 150 years, but when we come back from the market, I think we'll wrap this up.
Cool.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1.
Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back from the market here for our last segment before the night ends. And this is Randy England. I'm here with Braden, and I think Lou is still with us, too. Lou, are you there?
I'm still here.
Well,
a little bit.
Yeah, all right, then. I'm glad you held out till the end. You almost have, anyway. But we were talking about occupational licensing and an article. It's not even a new one, but I ran into an article called Why Should Anyone Need a License for Anything? And the writer asks, imagine a U.S. state where locksmiths, pastoral counselors, home security companies, and acupuncturists do not have to be licensed by the government to do business. They could pursue certification with a private organization if they wanted to, but they could decide not to as well. Would chaos ensue? And then it goes on. Recently, the state legislature of North Carolina approved draft legislation that would undo licensing requirements for 15 professions, including locksmithing, pastoral counseling, and acupuncture. At present, practicing in these professions requires a license from the state. It is tempting to assume that the only way professional certification can be effective is if the state does it and if it is mandatory. Neither assumption is true. Take acupuncture. If North Carolina no longer requires acupuncturists to be licensed, private organizations will step in. And as long as customers find value in seeing certified acupuncturists, at least some acupuncturists will voluntarily pursue private licensure. And, you know, this is kind of a positive move that, you know, not only should some licensing just disappear completely, but the ones that actually do need to have some, what would you call it, you know, oversight, at least for mm-hmm. that consumers would want some way to know that someone will take care of them. Yeah, some double check. Although I'll tell you, you know, in this, you know, with the internet and everything, I go by the stars and reviews on Amazon quite a bit. I can't imagine that wouldn't become even more important for professionals of all kinds, and is happening right now on you know, in a lot of places. I have relatives in the medical profession, and you know, sometimes doctors, and in my profession, lawyers, get real upset about what gets said about them online. I can't mm-hmm. help but think that it's mostly a good thing, and they should just suck it up and shut up.
Sure.
Because people are, you know, saying what they want. And you know, we've read enough reviews on Amazon to know, you know, the cranks from the legitimate right. reviews. I mean, you know, the thing comes and the person finds that they're, you know, the shipper broke the thing in half mm-hmm. and they give the review 1 star because it arrived broken in half through no fault right. of the manufacturer or Amazon, just because some jerk, you know, threw it around in a truck or something. Although maybe they should have packed it better.
Yeah, I read the reviews on like the Walmart website or Amazon or whatever company I'm doing business with, and yeah, you do have to weed out the squeaky wheel ones where people are just trying to get their bee on and complain about stupid stuff. You know, there's a lot of times it'll be some dumbo that's having they're having problems with the equipment because it's not loser friendly, and you know, so that's where their big complaint is. So you can kind of weed those out and find out what the real deal is on it.
The article they talk about what if the state decides not to serve as a licensor? Will private organizations step in? The answer is an almost certain yes. Take athletic trainers, one of the professions the North Carolina bill would remove licensing requirements for. Becoming an athletic trainer in North Carolina requires a state license, but becoming a personal trainer does not. It turns out most employers seem to want only certified personal trainers. Even though the state doesn't demand it, you almost have to have the certification if you want to work in that state. Now, that's a non-coercive way to watch the quality of that person's work. You can apply that to anything.
Well, it sounds good to me.
Well, I would love to see all occupational licensing disappear, and there are ways to get it done. Let's take the Underwriters Laboratory and have them take over the FDA. You know,
sure.
But it would only be advisory. You know,
gotcha.
Well, I think we are about at the end of tonight's Freedom Fiends.
That was good.
And it's been a pleasure, gentlemen.